Art, tell me about traveling and road life for the 20 years that you played, and then the effect it had on not only on you, but on your wife and your kids.
I'd rather not talk about that. It's too doggone lonesome. But you know, that was my job. I had a job to do, and during the Depression when I started out, and listen, that's the only way. If I hadn't been in baseball, I don't know where I'd have been and what I would have done or anything, because that was a lifesaver to me. And Truett and Sewell and I, we started a baseball pension plan. We was in Pittsburgh one time, and Truett said, Art, he was at Beaumont at the time. I went down in 32. Truett said to me, he said, Art, said, we got 200 acres, let's buy 200 acres of ground and build some houses, get 10 of our nice buddies.
That's all right, I can see.
And let's build us a hell of a home. And I said, well, that's a good deal. But I says, let's start a baseball pension plan. And he said, I said, now you're a 25-game winner. And I says, I'll get all the names and everything. And he said, you don't have a gut like if you don't do that. Well, I went to Brooklyn. I got back in there and get the lawyer's name. I've been here to his name. I went to him and he said, I told him about it. I told him I had all the names. He said, I left him pass at the gate and everything, you know. He said, yeah, let's start it. We started the baseball pitching plan. Don't put it in soil in there. He took it before the landowners, the owners and all, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing you know, said, we'd match every dime they put in there. And now I'm going a little pinching off of it.
Oh, that's good. What about the travel restrictions during World War II? I know the spring trainings were held at, like, in places in Indiana, not far from here, Lafayette and places like that.
You know, I owned land in Oklahoma at that time. I owned 240 acres of land. And they wouldn't let me leave because so many kids joined reserve, you see. And they joined and volunteered. And I was in 1A, see, if they hadn't done that, I'd have been in service, see, but they didn't. And they didn't have nobody to work the land. Well, I had to get my crops in and everything. And Lou McKinnon, I was in St. Paul at that time, and they called down there and called down the draft board, and you said, fine, said, well, when he gets his crop down, we'll go out and look at it. We'll let him go. And later on, they did. I played about 2 months. But, that's terrible. I tell you, away from home and all this wars are going on, and it's lonesome, but we had to do it.
Mm-hmm. Art, you pitched with Brooklyn in 45 when the war was still going on and some of the major leaguers were away. Then 46 and everybody was back. Do you see any big difference between 45 and 46 in the quality of play?
It might have been a little bit, but I tell you what, us minor leaguers, we got a chance to throw what we could do, you see. They might have been a little different, maybe one or two men, but they brought up guys that was tough. They were from minor leagues. They were good hitters, and they were good pitchers. Look at Cy Buchan and Rudolph, and I bet you I could name you 30, 40, see. They didn't get a chance to go for the big leagues up here. And you take Rube Mountlinall. He came in, you know. He couldn't get nobody out. Of course, he wasn't in shape, you see. Mm-hmm. But Bucher and I and Hugh Casey, well, I just go to pitchers Hugh Casey then, you see. And if I hadn't got the chance, I wouldn't have been, see. Yes, it's a little different, but they were good hitters. Boy, DeRocher was really surprised. But DeRocher, he's a guy that... We had a clubhouse meeting one time, he did. We all listened at him. And he'd say, which I thought was terrible. He'd say, guys like this, quick as the guys get back there, out, out, hear him, out, out. Just names like that on. No, dressing too, you know, dressing to Charlie Dresden. He was a showboat too. Red Card is a nice guy. Grocery didn't care. He just for him and that's all. But, it was tough during then. Traveling was terrible. We couldn't get meat to eat or anything, you know. We've been used to meat and all. And was eating horse meat and didn't know it. These mm-hmm. restaurants had closed mm-hmm. them up, you know, and oh, we just loved that horse meat. We go in, the signs on it and everything, you know, and what's the matter? Well, they're selling horse meat to you guys.
How about, we talked a little bit, you said about pancake gloves. So I want to talk a little bit about equipment.
Well, they had the three-finger empty glove. Has a three-finger, you see. And anyway, well, they were small gloves. Now they got large. They couldn't be with just certain size. Greenberg, he had one about a half inch or maybe an inch too big one time. They cut it back, you see. They wouldn't let him use it. They did that in St. Louis down here. They let him use it. Now they got one that's like a net.
Yes, 13 inches long. You wonder how they could drop a ball.
But you know, Joe Judge, the first baseman, I tell you, he was something else. Harry Davis in Detroit was great. Alexander was a big man. He is great. But if Alexander would pitch me the ball one time, I'd be grow 1-0. That's a tough ball game, you see, right in Detroit. I made a little talk out here to senior citizens, you know, long ago, and I was telling them this and that about that, see, and so... Anyway, this old man got up back there and he said, Art, I seen you pitch in Detroit against Lefty Groves. You had Groves beat 1-0. If Dale Alexander pitched you that ball, you'd have beat Groves 1-0. I had Jimmy Fox at bat, see, and I threw him a sidearm curveball, and he looked at that and hit the ball between me and Alexander, and I covered first base. I was waiting for him there, you see. And he slid in there, and Moriarty was an umpire, that dirty dog. And he called him
safe.
Bing Miller hit double off the wall, next off of me, you see. And they took me out and put in Yulee. And Simmons hit the right center for a double and beat me in my ball game, see. And so, but those little gloves, I used a small glove. I got a little glove right out there. Now they want it in there. I've been offering $500 for my glove,
mm-hmm.
$500 for a little old ball. I've been offered $15,000 for my baseball at Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm. How about, we'll talk about baseballs. Were now the balls that you know they play with now, there isn't much difference from one to another. Was that the way when you played, or were they quite a bit different from one to the next, and there were, you could maybe doctor the ball a little bit?
Well, you know, I cheated every now and then,
mm-hmm.
just with two strikes.
Mm-hmm.
You see that little old thing there, just very little, and you rub the ball, you never touch it, you see. And if they call for the ball, you just roll it to them or do something, and they looked at your hands, all you do is that and it's gone, you see, mm-hmm. just anything, you can't stop it, just little, you got. But here's the thing about it, I was telling you, if you throw that ball, only throw the two strikes. If you throw it here, it won't do nothing. Here, it's going to explode. Isn't that something? You throw a curveball 21 feet and 6 inches, and it don't break till it gets this far from the plate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand that as many as I've thrown. But that's it.
How about the uniforms?
Oh,
hot, heavy?
And Brooklyn had those satin things, you know, and at night, and oh, you couldn't. We was losing ball games. You want a pain pill? But those gloves now, and then the catcher's mitt. These catcher's mitt. I've got a catcher's mitt that Ray Bears gave me and Al Lopez catch you out here in the shed now. And my goodness, with these, I go to these high schools and I hold a little baseball clinic every now and then, show these kids how to pitch and all, and the scouts meet me down here in Indianapolis at Brownfield, and we go through a clinic for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you know, and try to show a kid. They won't even listen to you. Won't even listen to you. Kid that's got, they drive $30,000 cars to the school.
Yeah, at the school.
Gee, I can't believe it. It's hungry. Man, mm-hmm. What an opportunity this younger generation's got.
Now, just to get back to baseball for just one last thing here. During the Depression, not a lot of money. You know, baseball had to do something to survive. Do you think they juiced the baseball up to more offense, make more people interested in the game, or?
Well, they did for a couple of years. But now with the big leagues, making $4,500, 1930, see? Just think of that. And boy, these guys now.
Well, those guys get that more than that now for one at bat, so.
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But you take, I don't know, it just blows clean out. Just think those pictures are now. They call me in more than that because there's only four of us guys left in Detroit, see. Mm-hmm. And, but they get around. Gosh, I'm 87 years old, see. Mm-hmm. But that's.
We talked a little bit about earlier about pitching the guys, you know, and you said about pitching inside and knocking guys down, and it was expected, kind of expected then. It wasn't a big deal. And now if anybody throws inside, now they want to run out to the mound and you know, wrestle with the pitcher, hit him in the head or something like that. Was it when you played, you knocked a guy, that guy come up and hit a home run next time up, he was expected to be knocked down? Or?
Absolutely. Well, maybe not that, but the next time he came to bat,
yeah.
See. Yeah. And the thing about it is, we'd pick on the good hitters. If the pitcher had started on our good hitters, we'd pick on their good hitters, too, you see. And, well, I don't know. It's just, it's tough. People are so geared up so anymore, you know. Any little thing makes you mad. We see so much. You know, when I was a kid growing up, we didn't have running water in our house, no nothing, ice box, no nothing. And I used to chop cotton in the field, and we'd get to the end of the road and we'd go back. We had a 50-gallon barrel out there of the oatmeal and lemon juice in it, hot, hot. I wore a bonnet, chopping cotton a half a mile. We get down there, you know, at the end of it, and here's an old man sitting down there that Only, he owned a bunch of land, but the only thing he'd done, I'd never seen him work a day in his life, but he'd made grandfather clocks and violins and whittled everything out with a knife. And he'd tell us these things. And one of these days, you're going to be have a little box in there and see all over, hear him talk to people all over the whole world. And have a, like, he didn't say a TV, a box in there, and he'd see all over the whole world. People going to move. We thought he's crazy. Now, that's way back there. Can you believe that? And here I have lived to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Now I just can't believe it.
Boggles your mind, huh?
Yes, it does.
How'd you get along with all your managers? We talked a little bit about Casey. Maybe you didn't get along great with Casey, and DeRosier could be tough and stuff. But, you know, start with Bucky Harris and then wind up with Billy Herman or Billy Burwell or whoever you wound up with Pittsburgh.
Billy Herman. Well, Bucky Harris was great. He was for the ball player. He didn't try to show anybody up. And the trouble Bucky had with the owners and all seemed like all the good pitchers working on a bonus. They had to win so many ball games. And when the good teams would come in there and the good pitchers would pitch, they wouldn't pitch. But when a tail end ball club come in there with not a very good pitcher pitch, they fight to get to the mound. But, you know, but that's just the way, I guess, it's human nature. People are going to try to, well, you have to fight for what you could get then, is your job.
Yeah.
You got out of baseball, I tell you what, you didn't need no work. You're only WPA.
Mm-hmm.
The first job ever I had when I was a kid. I made government toilets, outhouses. You don't know what that is, do you?
No, sir, I don't.
Well, we didn't have a toilet inside. Right. We had an outhouse out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I built them. I made $5 and a quarter. I made 13 a week.
Mm-hmm.
Sawed them out and cut them out for the WPA. I was 14 years old when I done that. I had money. No other kid had any money. I had $5 and a quarter. I'd buy 3 dozen bananas for a dime.
Mm-hmm.
I'd feed all the kids in the neighborhood. They thought I was old Santa Claus. See, the time that's changed so much in my time.
How about, we talked a little bit about Casey. Anything else you want to say about him?
Yeah, but Casey was a guy that, Casey was, I guess, a real good ball player. And he done some good hitting in the World Series. And he's still living them out. He's still living that out. And Casey was a, I don't know. Casey had a lot of good ball players. Now, I'm not saying he's a good manager. I think he's a great manager. But the thing about it is, Casey was, I think he was lucky that things he made, since I know a little bit about baseball and seen good manners and everything, Eddie Durr, Bob Coleman, the guy that just retired from Los Angeles out here, it's Halk.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, those guys, man, they're good. Connie Mack, John McGraw, I seen Joe McCarthy, all that bunch. They're different. They're different than the guys we got now.
How'd you get along with the brass, with the owners and the general managers?
Great. I have no trouble.
Oh, good.
Like if in if they had a 3-day off and I wanted to come here to Indiana and visit my sister, or I'd say, hey, I'd just go to Bucky and ask him, and he'd, sure, sure. He knew I didn't drink or smoke or anything, run around or anything, and he'd grant it that way. And I appreciated that.
How about the press? Get along good with the press?
Well, I tell you, no, I didn't. I tell you why I didn't. In Detroit, they wanted $100 here and $100 there to write stuff about you.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was terrible. I thought it was terrible. They wouldn't do it. Some of the guys did it, and I said, no, sir, they're going to print it. If I get knocked out 900 times, let them print it like it is. They ain't going to, no, sir. I didn't. Just like I did on the Jackie Robinson deal, I've got my own mind. My daddy said, as long as you're in the right, I'll stick with you, and you're in the wrong, you can root out. And I said, boy, I'm going to do the same thing.
How'd you get along with the fans? Tell me a little bit about that story about with the three windups in Philadelphia. You said the fans were counting along.
Well, I used to pitch, you know, to take my windup, go over my head three times, you mm-hmm. know. And I couldn't stand the fans going, one, two, three, you know. And that sort of got me, all them people.
This is the Philadelphia A's fans. This is when you first started?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I pitched against second ball, against second game of pitching the big league.
Yeah.
And boy, I started to wind up, you know, that's where I did. Oklahoma City and all around, you know. But I went.
Yeah.
And they got a kick out of that. And I got where that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I practiced. I got in front of a mirror in my room and I practiced, you know. You know, things don't come easy. You gotta work at it.
You know, I bet. Changing your, you know, go from three of these just to eliminate
sure.
those. It must have been tough.
Sure.
You said you got $4,500 in 1930. What kind of, when you signed back, I can't remember what year it was, and I don't remember the guy's name. I probably should have written it down. When you signed originally, the first scout that signed you, what did you get for signing originally, and what was the most money you made in a year?
Well, I got $250 for signing, if I made the club with Oklahoma City.
Right.
And then I promised a bonus out of my sales to Detroit, but he wouldn't give it to me if I'd report to Detroit. That was in 29. He said, I'll give it to you when I come back to Oklahoma City and want to talk to you. That's Johnny Holland, see, in the Western League. And I stopped by there. And he promised me, just like Branch Rickey did, see.
Mm-hmm.
Branch Rickey. I was having a good year in Brooklyn, you know, and Branch Rickey offered me. Dorothy told me, said, hey, Branch wants Rickey, he wants to send off. Don't you go up there. But said, he's going to call you. And later he did. And he told me what he's going to give me. But when I went to, we didn't win the pennant, you see. We tied with the pennant. He didn't give me nothing like he's promised to. Well, Johnny Holland didn't give me nothing like he promised to. That hurt me more than anything. The owners of Barca had promised me.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, with the Cubs, Johnny Holland Jr., he called me in Oklahoma City, you see. And he was business manager of the Cubs up here for years. Nice guy. Not like your dad.
Yeah.
But nice guy.
How about, did they have anything... Art like meal money back in those days?
Oh, yes.
What kind of money are you talking about?
We got
about?
$2 and a quarter. That is three meals a day.
And that was two and a quarter per day when... And that was that all year long, or was it just on the road? Or
no, just on the
just
road.
Just on the road, I see. Two and a quarter. Wow. How about superstitions? Were you superstitious at all?
Well, Yes and no. I wore the same old sweatshirt when I pitched. Mm-hmm. And I'd start off my feet. And like I was going to pitch tomorrow, I'd run all day long that tomorrow. You know, we played day games then. I had to report at 11 o'clock. I'd get up, eat my breakfast, go right back to bed. I'd stay in bed till I went right to the park. Still on my feet. Now these guys walk, they do everything, they play golf and go out and everything. I don't know how they do it. But yes, I had the same old sweatshirt, but you know, Ben Chapman, I roomed with Ben. He used to be the Yankees, you know. He went back to the Dodgers, and I did too. He and I roommate. And he had superstitious. He had to do things just right. He was a lot more superstitious than I was. He sort of got mad at me, and he said, "Boy, get on your route. Get it going."
Anybody else that was really superstitious? Anybody played against?
Because I could name guys that... We had a guy named Hugh Gibson, good pitcher, about 6'4" and weighed 220 pounds, stronger than you, and good pitcher, good stuff. And boy, he'd eat a box of aspirins, just nervous, you couldn't talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
But the first inning, you know, and he'd be good. But man, he'd fight you, he'd knock you down, man, you couldn't imagine, couldn't tell him before a ball game, or the day before, no. You just handed the ball during the meeting and say, "Hoot, you're pitching." Why is a lot of guys like that? They just, the nerves are just shot. But superstitious, yeah, they walk on the sideline, they do this, you know, and they do the same routine. Even coaches, managers know. Yeah.
Did you, this isn't really superstitious, but I was looking at doing a research on you, and you know, the Tigers sold you in 33. And in 34, they went to the World Series. And then Brooklyn sold you in 46. And in 47, they went to the World Series. Did you always feel like you were just one step behind?
Well, yeah, but I said, well, that's just the way the ball bounces. Mm-hmm. You know? Just like that no-hitter I had from Gordon Gilmer in Boston. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't for me.
Just wasn't meant
to be. Then when DeRosa took me out, you know, and had a no-hitter in Cincinnati, well, I declare.
Fit to be tied, huh?
Yeah, it's just, you just, sometimes you get to thinking over, and I'd see some of these guys, you know, over TV and watching, you know, and boy, they go this, go that, you know, and just, boy, it just, boy, I just, ooh, if I was just a young man again, man, I'd like to pitch again some of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
Overkeen, I wish you, he and I, we've had some pitching battles. Yeah, he's a nice kid. Used to be. How's he look? How's he doing?
Who's
Harry Burkeen?
Harry Burkeen is fine.
Good.
Just good. Other than, like I said, when I went to see him, he had a little problem. He had been to the doctor's, a little bit skin cancer patch on his nose, but looks good. Nice guy. Was waiting on the front porch for me. It was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's super. Everywhere you see him, he's a super guy.
I told him if I came back to Ada, I'd make sure I'd look him up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, nice guy. You played at the time when it was all day games, and then you played when night baseball showed up. What did you think of night baseball, and did it make any difference to you? Did you like pitching at night, or you hated it?
Yes, yes. I was strong during the night. I was really stronger. Oh, I could make that ball hum at night. I threw that fast slider about 91 or 2 miles an hour, you know. And boy, listen, good. Yeah. Yeah, I like it because you're stronger, you see.
Was there we talked a little bit about the no-hitter. You came within, I guess, within one out, and then the other one that DeRosa pulled you out. Was that your most memorable game, or did you have another one that you...
Well, I tell you, no Whit Vandermeer came into Brooklyn and... I forget 43 or 4, I forget what it was, when I was back to Brooklyn. And he came in there and we had a 19-inning game. I relieved in and pitched 13 and two-thirds innings, no scores. Went 19 innings. And a week later they came back and I get to start a game against Vandermeer again. He had us 1-0 in the ninth inning. Two out. Omo gets a base hit, and he hit Stevenson. Dixie Walker comes to bat and hit one out of every field 3-1. And another time, I'd like to tell you this, another time when the Cubs come into town and Paul Derringer, and I was starting to get Paul Derringer seeing the Cubs, you know. And he's warming up over here, and I was warming up over there, and he said, "Hey, old man, you pitching against me today?" I said, "Well, I'm starting." And so I beat him 3-1, see. We was in the Pepper game there, and White and a whole bunch of, you know, Pepper game, you know, going on. The grocer come out and said, "Art, don't let old Derringer get by that." I asked him how he'd come out yesterday, and I called her and I said, "Hey, old man, how'd you come out yesterday, old man?" Oh, he couldn't take it.
How about the, what was your worst game? Did you have a game where you cringe when you think about it?
Well, I've had a lot of bad games. Listen, I tell you, the guys that said he went out there, and I seen Dizzy Dean, I think the greatest pitcher ever was. And Herb Pinnock was the greatest left-hander I ever seen pitch. Dizzy Dean could just lie. He could tell you what he's going to do, and he'd go out and do it. Dizzy had control. He had a good curve, and he threw it where it ought to be. He had a good fastball. He'd ride that. He had exceptional speed. He had a good changeup. He was just a top pitcher. And he could do it so easy. And Pinnock was the same way. He could just take that left end. And I've seen Gehringer and those good hitters go up there against him, and they'd say, "Art, watch him, watch him. Tell me what am I doing." And he's, "I hit the ball, but it just don't go no place. He just missed a bat. He just missed, you know." And I'd watch those guys. And I'd say, "Oh, my." I said, "Even old Feller." Didn't like the hickey jerky feller had. He is a hickey jerky pitcher. Now, Bob Lemon, early win. I pitched an old timers game here in 64.
Mm-hmm.
Minneapolis called me up there, you see. And I throwed here, you know, and I said, "Well, I couldn't throw, you know, I can throw about 70 miles an hour, something like that. I just wanted to go up there if I did have to pitch. I'm trying to get the ball over, you know."
Hmm.
Well, I got up there, and who'd I face again? Killebrew.
Oh.
I warmed up in the bullpen, and George Lacy's down there, you know, and Monty Stratton and a bunch of them. And when I got to go in, well, George Lacy went down there, and he said, "That old guy's got something." And I went to throw in that bullpen, and man, I had the best stuff you ever seen in my life.
Hmm.
Man, it just come to me. And George Lacy told them guys, he said, "Boy, listen, that old man got something." And Killebrew was the first guy I faced. He didn't foul a ball. Four pitches and struck him out. And Jimmy Reese, he fouled one ball and I struck him out. I only got to pitch to two guys. They took me out, put in Monty Stratton. They let early win pitch too long, you see.
Yeah.
And so, I wanted to go back in. They put Monty Stratton in. He lost one leg, you know.
Yeah.
And here's the White Sox in 39. I was up there, you know. Boy, what a pitcher he was. And if I'd fall to 39, it's when he had the accident. And he went in there, and he couldn't get anybody out. I wanted to go back out there, and they wouldn't let me. And then the shower that night, we was taking a shower, and all where that thing had rubbed him, and he had to carry a suitcase in St. Louis to change him. Had sore that leg, I tell you, some of the guys just cried. I seen Jimmy Bucher and some of the gear in an early win said, "Oh my gosh, Monty," he said, "I'd have called this ball game off before I'd have let you pitch."
So, Art, tell me about the adjustments you had to make from when your playing days were over to life after baseball. Was it easy for you or not?
Well, I played 3 years over here at Lafayette, see. And that was pretty good, but I got out of, after then, my muscle just tightened up on me. I had to take shots for them.
Mm.
They just tightened up on me. I had to walk like an old man. I stepped over and didn't do that. I like that. I didn't know what the matter. I took, went to a chiropractor and everything, you know, took medicine, did everything. I just couldn't do it. And so Dr. Young, he'd come down there. I'd get some muscle spasm shots. Took me down and brought me out there. But gee, I've been, gosh, I had a heart attack here 3 years ago. Damaged my heart down a little bit. I got a pacemaker in here now. Mm-hmm. I'm doing real good, and I had both my cataracts over my eyes, and I see real good, 20-20 here and 20-50 here, 25 here.
Mm-hmm.
And I sleep good and eat good.
Well, what'd you do when you came back after your playing days were over? You mentioned a little bit earlier about some of the jobs that you had.
Oh, yeah, I built houses. I can show you $200,000 houses here that built, you know. I built my son's house out on the farm, you know, and real houses. I built Don Mills, built Nesbitt's house. I built one out on Humble Hill.
I sold
all my property and everything.
But Belgium hopes it'll mm-hmm. cut pollution in and, the country and all its bad effects on the environment. So the earth will be
I moved in this,
and
you know, we can't take care of nothing anymore.
CNN World mm-hmm. Report, this is Waybread International.
So that makes it, makes it nice.
I want to ask you just one more thing. If you could go back, Art, if there was one thing that you could do over or one thing that you could change in your career, what would it be, if anything?
Well,
maybe the no-hitter or getting taken out or?
No, the only wish that I could do, I wish I could have got the pitch. That's the only thing I wish. In the minor leagues, I've got the pitch. And I've won more games. And if you can pitch in minor leagues, double A on up, the easiest place in the world is pitching in the big leagues. I just wish that if I'd have been 6'3" or 6'4",
mm-hmm.
man, I'd have loved it. Man, I could. That's the only thing I wish. I wish I just got the chance to pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Used to, you know, I'm McNeely out here in the coast, you know. I pitched against him in Washington, you know, when I first went up. He's the Washington, Earl McNeely, with his infielder. And he's the manager of Sacramento when I went out there. And he said, we had Flynn, Cupu, Salvo, Horn, Beato, and none. But anyway, he said, here's a ball, and you're starting and you're finishing. I won 20 ball games last the other season.
Mm-hmm.
And man, I beat the good team. Joe DiMaggio and that bunch of beat them 9 times, you know. Gabby Street's team. Gabby Street, oh, he was a son of a gun to play for. Man, he was terrible. Never done nothing wrong. He never done nothing wrong. But it's tough to play for. Solly Parker, he's another guy. You take Eddie Dar, Bob Coleman, Dale Baker, Bucky Harris. Oh, I named so many men and many that's they wanted wonderful guys. Wonderful guys.
Mm-hmm.
Joshua, you'd hate his guts, and yet you could have a clubhouse meeting, you'd throw your arm off for him.
Mm-hmm.
He's.
Okay.
Let's say it anyway. But, baseball has been good to me.
Just wish you could have pitched some more.
Oh, I really do. I just absolutely. I just tell you, it's been so good to me. And listen, met so many friends, and I can go in any town, and gosh, if they know I'm there, they're there, but the dozens, and you know, that means a lot. Gosh, I went to St. Paul and Howard Schultz, and the guys came out, and Reese and Tommy Wells and can't even call his name now, but Bezanet, Del Bezanet used to be as a Dodger. Gosh, they come out there and they said, boy, when I went out there and struck them two guys out, they said they couldn't believe it. We had the big meeting after it was all over, you know. Yes, at the old timers game up here, you see. And But after the, well, we had a big meeting after all that again, and Clark Griffin Jr., you know. I seen Clark Griffin, he owned the Washington Senators when I went up, you know. And his son owns the Minnesota Twins now, you see. And we was up there and all that, and High Shoes and Art Weiss and the whole bunch of guys. They couldn't believe that I had that kind of stuff, you know. Howard Schultz, he's the first baseman of the Dodgers, you know, and I was up there, you see, he and Eddie Season. And he told his wife, Gloria, he's going out there and said, I hope Art don't pitch, don't try to pitch. And I went out there and struck out that guy, you know, and he said, he couldn't believe it. I couldn't either.
Well, if I ever meet Harmon Killebrew, I'm going to ask him about that.
Do what?
If I ever meet Harmon Killebrew, I'll make sure first thing I ask him.
Do that.
Okay. Art, thanks for your time today.
Listen. Good. Just send me the tape of it, will you?
I certainly will.